Okay, so far we've learned three of the five types of offerings. We've learned burnt offerings, grain offerings, and peace offerings. And maybe you've noticed that none of them were brought as penalties for sin. Instead, they were intended to be ritual gifts that a person could give to God out of a glad and willing heart as a person sought to draw near to God within the holy precinct of the temple. The remaining two types of sacrifices are concerned with sin, the sin offering and the guilt offering. Before we begin to study them, we should take note of how the Torah defines sin. Leviticus 4:1 says that a person sins when he does any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done. The converse is also true. A sin is a failure to do anything the Lord has commanded to be done. To put it simply, sin is breaking God's commandment. Sin is a translation of the word chata. It's an archery term. It means to miss the mark. A sin is like an arrow that falls short of the intended target. As Paul says, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The word Torah is also derived from an archery term. The word yarah means to take aim. The Torah is the target for which we are to aim. Sin is a matter of falling short of that target. Leviticus 4:1 says that even an unintentional transgression of God's commandments is a sin and requires a sin offering. So, for example, we read Leviticus 4:2, it says, if a person sins unintentionally in any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and commits any of them, and then Leviticus 4:3 says, if the anointed priest sins to bring guilt on the people, and we get all sorts of different classifications. The Hebrew word sin offering, chata'at, is almost identical to the word for sin, chata'at. Depending on who sinned, the Torah is going to go on and prescribe different types of sin offerings. If the high priest sins, he must bring a bull. If the whole community sins inadvertently, elders representing the community must bring a bull. If a leader, like a king, sins, he must bring a male goat. If an Israelite sins, a common person, he must bring a female goat or a lamb. If he can't afford the goat or the lamb, he can bring a pair of doves. If he can't afford the doves, he can bring flour. The ritual procedures for the sin offering are complex, and they differ depending on which type is brought. To further study them out, I recommend Torah Club 5's commentary on Leviticus 4. Paul teaches that sin is a condition common to all men. He says all have sinned. The book of Ecclesiastes says, there is not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and never sins. With the laws of the sin offering, the Torah illustrates the concept, assuming that not only common people sin, but also the king, and also the elders, and even the anointed holy priest. Knowing that everyone sins, it might be tempting to wink at one's own moral failings and to shrug them off and say, oh well, no one's perfect, everyone sins. But the laws of the sin offerings illustrate the gravity of sin. Disobedience to God's commandments is a serious matter, not something to be discarded with a cavalier attitude. Even unintentional sins are regarded as so serious that a sacrifice must be brought to repair the relationship. However, the sin offering, the chata'at, was not a penalty for sinning. Instead, it was a means of spiritual purification after the sin had already been dealt with, repented, and forgiven. The sin offering was not brought only for sin. As with the other sacrifices, it's probably best to regard the sin offering as a gift brought to God, something brought in order to draw near to God. For the person who had sinned, it was a sort of, I guess you could say, an apology gift. It didn't earn forgiveness, but it was an appropriate gesture to make. It was also brought in connection with ritual purification. Torah Club points out several instances when a chata'at must be brought even though there is no sin committed. For example, Leviticus 12:6, a woman after childbirth must bring a sin offering. Leviticus 14:19, a leper after his cleansing must bring a sin offering. Numbers 6:11, a Nazirite who has come into contact with a corpse must bring a sin offering. And Numbers 6:14, a Nazirite who has completed the term of his vow must bring a sin offering. And these are just a few examples. None of these people have committed a sin. Therefore, the chata'at, the sin offering, should not be understood to be simply an offering for sin. It's not a punishment for sin. Actually, a better concept A better translation for chata'at might be purification offering. The Hebrew word chata'ah sometimes denotes purification instead of sin. As we study the ritual procedure, we'll see that the blood of the chata'at is sprinkled in various purification rites. And this helps us understand it. It makes a good deal of sense. A chata'at is often mandated for an individual that has become ritually unclean, unfit. The unclean person has not sinned. It's not a sin to be unclean. But he or she is in need of purification before he or she can enter God's holy space, his temple on earth. Understanding a chata'at as a purification offering instead of as a sin offering resolves the difficulties we find with the sin offering and helps us better understand the rituals involved. The fifth and last type of sacrifice we'll be studying is the guilt offering. Leviticus 5:6 says, "He shall also bring his guilt offering, his asham, to the Lord for his sin which he has committed. A female from the flock, a lamb or a goat as a chata'at, as a sin offering. So the priest shall make atonement on his behalf for his sin." Okay. The guilt offering, the fifth type of sacrifice in our reading, is similar to the sin offering. In fact, it is a type of a sin offering. In Hebrew, it's called an asham, a word that can be understood to mean indemnity or reparation or repayment. The guilt offering differs from the sin offering in that it is prescribed primarily for offenses that require a repayment of restitution. It seems to be a type of penalty. When a person committed a sin, like misappropriation of someone else's property or misuse of sacred objects, he was required to pay reparations and bring a guilt offering. The Torah says that he was to repay the full amount of damages, plus one-fifth, and then bring a guilt offering. The implication is that an offense toward another person is also an offense toward God. When we cheat or damage or misuse someone else or their property, it is as if we have cheated, damaged, and misused God. Therefore, when we settle accounts, we must repay the victim, and then we must repay God. The reparation made to God is the asham, the guilt offering, a type of sin offering. The Torah does not say that the sacrifice takes away the sin, but it does say that if a man confesses the sin, repents, makes reparation, and seeks atonement before the Lord with the asham, he will be forgiven for any one of the things which he may have done to incur guilt, Leviticus 6:7. Thereby, the sacrificial system, though not the actual mechanism for removing sin, provides this beautiful picture of cleansing from sin while foreshadowing the coming of Messiah, whose death would serve as the final sacrifice for sin.